Right now, it's time for History Matters. And for that, as always, we turn to the one and only historian extraordinaire, man about town, Scott Washington, who joins us here in the studio to take a look back at this week in history. How
you know, this is always the place to really see where history happens, right here. It's like seeing plates juggle, the way you make the difficult look easy. It's just fabulous. So.
Plates juggling is a kind of history, right?
Yes, it is.
There's so, many, there's so much going on.
Juggling, either one. Yeah. Both of those are both at the same time. It's
yes,
like
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Juggling and spinning all at the same time.
That's right.
Yeah, so we've got to start by talking about the thing that's happening right now in downtown Chapel Hill, which we've been talking about all week, but it's to recognize a historical event that happened on this day in history 59 years ago, which is the beginning of the sit-ins in Chapel Hill to protest segregation at the Colonial Drug on West Franklin Street. The Chapel Hill Nine did that beginning on February 28th of 1960, and going on right now is an event to dedicate the future site of a historical marker to finally officially commemorate that by the town.
And that's fabulous. Mm-hmm. I think that's so good and so necessary, and it fits in right with what's going on this week. And so many things like this. You know, we've talked about how the overlap of history is making it very exciting, and sometimes it's hard to even catch up with everything.
Right. The fact that there is an overlap of history makes it really easy to catch up with anything.
Yes,
it's like, I've seen this before.
Yes, it is. Well, I mean, the fact that what you just mentioned about the sit-ins, and, you know, that it took so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we think back to this week, February 26, 1869, is when the 15th Amendment mm-hmm. was passed by Congress, giving everyone a right to vote regardless of skin color, because here was the 13th Amendment and freed the slaves. Wonderful. Except then people said, well, you can't vote just mm-hmm. because you're freed. I mean, can you imagine that we've had to go through so much to have amendment after amendment, which is very important.
Yeah.
But even then, everybody thought it was solved. We're done. We're finished. And yet that's not the case. In fact, within a year of that, this week, February 26, 1870, is when a Graham, here in North Carolina, mm-hmm. Graham town, a town commissioner, Wyatt Outlaw, an African-American, was lynched by a band of Ku Klux Klansmen. And Outlaw had served in the 2nd Regiment United States Colored Cavalry during the Civil War, and he attended the Freedmen Convention in Raleigh afterwards and organized a Union League aimed to promote loyalty to the United States after the Civil War in Alamance County, as well as a school and a church. And that became the target of the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that violence and his murder, Governor William Woods Holden declared a state of insurrection in Alamance and Caswell counties in July 1870 and brought in force to restore order.
Yep.
But it didn't entirely help.
Yeah.
100 Klan suspects were arrested during what has been called the Kirk Holden War. But most were released on technicalities. None were ever tried. I think there were even those who were indicted on murder. But meanwhile, these Holden gets elected governor. The Klansmen organize. They elect their people in the legislature, and he is the only governor to be impeached
mm-hmm.
and removed from office.
The very next year as a direct result of this.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
So this is really important. The fact that it takes another century
mm-hmm.
before we have people still having to protest, still having to define these rights, is a testimony to persistence, but in two ways. You know, the persistence of bad ideas and also good people persisting against evil ideas.
And I talk about this in American government. We're talking about civil rights just a week ago, and we were talking about the Voting Rights Act of 1965,
right.
which is one of the most major pieces of legislation in American history, and absolutely should not have been necessary, because 95 years before in 1870 we ratified the 15th Amendment that should have taken care of this,
right.
but then it takes almost 100 years to get around to passing a bill to actually put teeth in that amendment.
Yeah, that's really an important thing to remember, is just how many people have worked so hard for mm-hmm. this, and how many people suffered and yet kept going day after day and saying, This is not good enough.
And it really does take persistence, too.
I mean, oh,
it takes
absolutely.
95 years to get from the 15th Amendment to the Voting Rights Act, where finally that right to vote can actually be made manifest in a very real way. It took 58 years between the Plessy versus Ferguson decision upholding segregation to Brown versus Board of Education that struck it down. And this is another, I mean, you mentioned persistence, the persistence of bad ideas and the persistence of people working hard
good
and pushing
people.
Hard
That's
to
right.
To overcome that. I was at the last weekend. I was at the ceremony in Hillsboro to recognize the winners of the Pauli Murray Awards that Orange County gives out every year. And Blair Kelly, if I'm remembering right, NC State historian, got up and delivered the speech. And what she talked about, and this is the subject of her book, is that so often when it comes to social movements like the civil rights movement, we recognize the people who were there when the gains were achieved. We recognize, you know, Martin Luther King was standing there in 1964 when LBJ signed the Civil Rights Act, and those are the people that we recognize. We also ought to be recognizing, she referred to them as the losers, the people who did the work of fighting and fighting and fighting for generations and always getting blocked, always getting stopped, but doing that work of keeping the momentum going and the pressure on so that eventually down the road, and maybe they wouldn't even live to see it, but down the road those gains would be made.
Maybe not losers, maybe a wave of resistance that continued to persist despite everything and said, no, this is not good enough. In fact, I was this past weekend was over at the Burwell School in Hillsboro. And, of course, one of the great persons that is associated with the Burwell School is Elizabeth Keckley, who later becomes, was an enslaved person, gets her freedom, goes to Washington, D.C., becomes best friend, confidant, and dressmaker to Mary Todd Lincoln, and then writes her memoirs afterwards, giving us an incredible look at the Lincoln household during the Civil War. But what came up during the past year, celebrating the 150th anniversary of her birth, was, well, what happened the 100th anniversary or 200th anniversary. So we'll get the right number.
She was super young when
she
was,
200th anniversary.
200th anniversary.
That's right,
there
of her
we go.
Birth.
Yeah.
That the question came up, well, what other persons of color were at the Burwell School? And do you know, they had an incredible task force got together and not only compiled a list of people, but also what was going on in the surrounding area. And it was just fascinating. And to hear descendants who were there of these people in Hillsboro as well speak very movingly about what it was like was a rare instance. And they produced a 125 large page booklet of this. So it's really, really good.
It's worth kind of stepping back and reflecting on the fact that those records were kept.
So yes.
Abraham Lincoln in the 1850s was one of the people, and Frederick Douglass did the same thing in his speech on his 4th of July speech on slavery. Abolitionists and people like Lincoln who were not abolitionists but who were opposed to slavery would say this on a regular basis, that people who were pro-slavery, people who defended slavery, would constantly argue that, oh, slavery is okay because the slaves are not really human beings. That was the argument that they used to convince themselves. And Frederick Douglass and Lincoln made the same argument, and others responded with, you don't even believe that because you're keeping the sort of records on slaves that you would never keep on other forms of property. So the fact that the records were even kept in the first place was proof positive that the whole logic behind slavery was corrupt and flawed.
It was.
And not even believed by the people who were making those arguments in the first place.
Well, you know, it's interesting because another date that comes up this week, March 2nd, 1807, is when the importation of slaves is banned by the U.S. Congress. And that was under Jefferson. And people go, why was this? Well, it's in the Constitution. And this was a great point of contention. Article 1, Section 9 reads, the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808, but a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person. Mm-hmm. The the actual word slavery was so odious to the early Congress that they wouldn't allow it. But these were some of the stipulations that specifically Georgia and South Carolina said to be a part and to buy into the new U.S. Constitution. Yep. So they waited until this time. But, of course, it didn't ban slavery, and it didn't ban the fact that people were still within the United States saying, oh, well, you, if families of enslaved people had kids, well, then great, we can, they're still our property, and we can do with them as we please. I mean, just horrendous. But to prop up this system is what you're talking about, took a mental illness, an outlook, a perspective that saw people not as people, and that is very disturbing. Yeah. What the lengths that people went to.
Yeah, or pretended to see people not as people. Like, we're fully aware that they were people and did it anyway, which is even worse.
I will tell you a great story. My youngest son, who was in middle school, they were doing a segment on the Civil War, comes to a section on, well, what are the reasons for slavery? And Spencer said, well, looking around at his classmates and African-American friends, he said, well, there isn't any. No, she said, no, we are trying to prompt him. Come on, what is the rationale? She said, there isn't any.
There's no reason.
So she gave him an F, and trust me, the phone lines were burning up the next day with the principal and everyone else and saying, you know, he actually said the right thing. There is no rationale. That's rationale for that.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, there are these justifications that people gave, but nothing that really makes sense. Like, no.
Yeah.
And so... So an important thing, and so sometimes you have to sit down to stand up for rights, and it's good that that's happening in Chapel Hill, and that a marker is, I hope, will be in the works on that, too.
Yeah. Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters, should mention in terms of significant civil rights movements, a couple of other big things happened this week in history. February 25th, Hiram Rhodes Revels acceded to the U.S. Congress, first black man ever elected to Congress from Mississippi in 1870. 1875 Civil Rights Act was passed this week in history. So significant gains as well as significant setbacks. So other things that happened.
I'll do something really light here.
Go with the complete 180 and then go with something light.
This is, you know, we always want to try to find where are the origins of things. And one of them that I was absolutely astonished to find out was that the Tooth Fairy had an origin in the 1940s. Now, I just was like, I couldn't believe this. I said, is this really possible that
That's
something like
recent.
This? Yes, it was very recent. It was because February 28th is National Tooth Fairy Day, in case anybody was really caring about
today.
This. That is today. That's right.
Man.
So if you have any loose teeth, this is the time to do it. But apparently in the 1920s, fairies were used for all kinds of health education, from bath fairies to fresh air fairies.
Right.
All this. And even toothpaste in the rudimentary kind of ways. And then in 1927, a woman, Esther Watkins Arnold, published a little play for children called The Tooth Fairy. And it's the same year that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle of Sherlock Holmes fame, he proved his claim that fairies and gnomes are real and verified it with pictures of two little girls surrounded by fairies.
Right.
Okay. Anyways, this caught on, and in 1942, an article written by a columnist said, well, maybe you could use war stamp bonds, but this idea of replacing teeth
with coins.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you believe this? I mean, I did not know this. That, I mean, that's a talk about 180. We are, but it's like the origins of things. Like, really? You're thinking, oh, this must go back to the Middle Ages. No, it began in 1920.
Oh man, it was a toothpaste ad that started it all. That's good.
A woman writing up a little playlet and saying, oh well, they get a little coin for this. That's who takes your teeth away.
I read not long ago that you can actually measure inflation extremely well by keeping track of the average amount of money that gets left under a pillow from the Tooth Fairy from year to year. Like, it's gone way up since we were kids.
Oh, it's gone way up.
We got ripped off when we were kids.
We were just not born in the right decade, I can tell you.
Absolutely. Speaking with Scott Washington, we got time for one more. What do you got?
All right. Well, let's see.
We've got to do Buncombe County, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, that's a great one. And this is a real North Carolina, and you've heard it, well, that's all bunk.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with a fellow in the 19th century who was a legislator from
North Carolina, representing Asheville and representing Buncombe County.
Yes. Representative Felix Walker. So it's not, his name wasn't Bunk.
Right.
He was from Buncombe County.
Oh, it is now.
Well, on February 25th, 1820, he delivers a rambling speech that had absolutely nothing to do with the topic of the day. This is a guy who had served in the Revolutionary War, but that time he's just rambling on. They don't know what, and people just say, well, that's bunkum or bunk. Can you believe it?
It's a speech from bunkum, so it becomes bunk. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Henry Ford actually would popularize this by saying in 1916, history is more or less bunk, but that's not true here on WCHL, ever.
Especially when we can tell you the origin of the tooth fairy as well as the phrase bunk or bunkum.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. No way to doubt that. No way to doubt that at all.
You just can't make this stuff up.
And that is History Matters. As always, with Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.